From KUOW in Seattle, welcome to Soundside. I'm Libby Denkman, and let's get right to our guest this hour because he's had a busy week. Just in the last few days, Governor Inslee called for a special session to address Washington's drug possession laws, or lack thereof. He signed 7 new climate and energy bills into law. And oh yeah, he announced he's not running for re-election next year. Jay Inslee is here with me now to talk about all of that news and more. Governor Inslee, thanks so much for being here. Welcome.
Yeah, thank you. You forgot to list our win in the Kraken.
Yes, of course.
Too. You know, that's during the Inslee administration. Don't forget that.
Yeah, so. You're taking credit for that. Got it. Understood.
Well, you know, we're so humble. You know, so otherwise, I would.
Well, let's start at the beginning of the week. You announced that you are not running for a fourth term. Why now? And when did you make this decision?
Made it in the last week or so. And the reason now is, you know, whether you're a fan of the birds or the good book to everything, there's a season, and this was the right season to pass the torch. We've had an incredible run the last decade while I've been serving as governor. I mean, you look around the states and you'll find that we lead, you know, about 49 states in so many different areas. We've got the best climate, most aggressive and fair climate policies in the United States. We've got the best paid family medical leave. We've been rated in the top 10 on delivery of health care. We're moving forward, improving education with special education. We've got some of the most comprehensive gun violence laws in the United States. We're most protective of a woman's right of choice. We had difficult as it was, we saved as many lives in COVID as any other state. So we've had an incredible run during the last decade of dynamic growth in the state. I've played some role in that progress, and now, you know, it comes time to pass the torch. So we're going to have a first term governor instead of a fourth term governor. And I've been honored to have 3 terms, which has, you know, only happened once in our state's history to date. So I feel good about this. And by the way, I mean, we're working, my heart's still in the job for another year and a half. So we got more work to do.
Yeah, we're not trying to, you know, push you out the door before it's your
Thank
time.
You.
But multiple listeners messaged us to point out you've run for president once before. Of course, there's another election coming up. Is there any future in electoral politics for you, maybe in the presidential arena? I mean, is the Green Party trying to recruit you?
No, a big zero to that. No, there's zero chance that I would be interested in that office. I had a good run. We succeeded in advancing the climate change message into the national debate. But we got a good president now. He's had some tremendous success in climate. In fact, it's interesting. He called me the day before yesterday to just congratulate me and told me that, you know, I played some role in his policies. So that was gratifying. So we are really doing some good things at the federal level, but we have to move faster, and that's why I'm proud that our state is. I mean, we're ahead of the federal government in 49 other states. We've taken some really bold measures, including being the first state in the United States to really make sure that people get access to heat pumps so we don't do any more hookups necessary to fossil fuels starting next year. That's a first in the nation. Yesterday, I signed 7 bills that will increase our ability to build solar farms and wind farms and help this transition to clean energy. So I feel really good both on the federal level and on what our state is doing as leading the country. In fact, it was interesting. As I was driving to the solar farm in the Hanford Reservation yesterday, a governor called me and just called me up and said, hey, I need your advice on how do you do in my state what you've done in Washington. And I get those calls. So We're doing really well. Got a good president. We're gonna keep him.
I want to turn to criminal justice policies in the state because this is really on a lot of people's minds right now. You recently called for a special session to address the Blake fix. Starting May 16th, the legislature will return to work out a new drug possession law. Last month, the Democrat-led House failed to pass a bill that would have replaced Washington's current drug possession laws, which expire in July. What will finding a bipartisan solution look like here? And have you been involved in trying to get everybody to the table, either the 15 House Democrats who did not vote for this bill or any Republicans in the House?
Yes, we've been involved for over 105 days now, and we're continuing involvement. I talked to his leadership the last couple of days. It takes what legislation takes of looking out to a nitty-gritty that can get the votes, and we are looking for that. I believe that there is a good reason to believe that the legislators will come together with the necessary votes, in part because there is willingness of some Republicans to be of assistance to come up with a bipartisan approach. So I think the most likely result is a bipartisan bill that will answer multiple issues and multiple viewpoints, and that's what's going to be necessary here. So I do want the legislature to move now because we don't want cities to have to be going off in 100 different directions on this very important policy. I do believe we should have a statewide policy on this. I think there's good reason to believe that they will get this done. And basically, what I've been saying now for a couple months is what I believe the vast majority of Washingtonians believe, which is A, we need to make sure people get treatment for drug addiction, have it available to them, but to have some sanction if they refuse to participate in that, which would include some potential criminal sanction in maintaining that. And the legislators have by and large coalesced around having a gross misdemeanor for those who will not participate in treatment, but to have very, very meaningful, viable, and expedited drug treatment to get these folks into treatment, because we know ultimately that's the solution to this problem. It's not a solution just to, fill our jails with folks with drug treatment. The goal is to get people off of drugs. And so I think there is a good way to do that, and I hope legislators will succeed.
Yeah. Do you worry that the Republican criticisms of the Democratic Party in this case are going to stick, that the Democrats were unable to get their act together, get this legislation passed, and therefore you had the specter of a chaotic situation where individual cities would have to pass their own laws, and you had a delay and a potential reduction in the number of dollars going to treatment here? I mean, what does that say about Democrats' ability to get things done in Olympia?
Well, I'm past arguing about, responsibility on this thing. It's not productive at this point. I would point out that, I think there were zero Republicans to pass a bill to avoid this problem. There was 43 Democrats who voted yes. So I just don't think it's productive at this point to be arguing about blame. The blame game is not helpful at this moment. I can tell you that I think there is an attitude on both parties now to try to get a bill to my desk, and I feel fairly positive about that. We need to continue that effort to actually get the votes to get this job done. It is a contentious issue, but the legislators need to succeed. But I don't want that to detract from the incredible progress that the legislators made this year. $1 billion on housing. They answered my call for housing. Seven bills on climate. A new way to provide mental health treatment for people who need it, $1 billion of additional funding for improving mental health, really new ways to build more housing, to change our zoning laws so we can actually build more housing and use this $1 billion to get people more housing and mental health and drug treatment that is necessary. Really strong gun violence proposals, some of the strongest in the nation. I'm very pleased that, frankly, I was concerned the legislature was just going to send me one bill to ban assault weapons, but they sent me three that I had urged them to do, including a nation-leading effort to require safety training and have a 10-day waiting period. So they really delivered big time on multiple comprehensive big issues, and I think people should be pleased with what they did. I kind of characterize it as a three-run triple because they touched so many ways to help Washingtonians' lives this year. And so, yes, there's one more thing to get done. I hope it gets done.
Do you expect the assault weapons ban to hold up in court as we see gun rights groups challenging it?
I do. I just don't re Look, I was in the Capitol for 14 years. I never saw a painting of Ben Franklin holding an AR-15. I believe this is constitutional. The courts should uphold it. I believe that AR-15s should not be idolized. They should be prohibited. And that is well within the nature of our laws. Kids ought to be able to go to school and not worry about AR-15s. And I do believe that it will. But I do want to emphasize the other two bills were every bit as important. This bill that will require safety training and have a 10-day waiting period has been shown dramatically to decrease gun violence in a couple other states where it has been in place now for years and has not been knocked down by any court. So we have multiple approaches. And I think we ought to be proud of what we're doing leading the country. And by the way, we do lead the country. I just, you know, we were rated by U.S. News and World Report as the number two state to live in the whole country. Of course, we're mad. We want to be number one in everything. But we've been so successful economically. We've been so successful in protecting workers and workers' families with the highest medical leave, the best paid family leave so that people can be protected. And now the workers' family tax credit, with one of the biggest tax cuts in Washington history that I signed into place, where 400,000 working families got a tax cut this year of up to $1,200. So this is a great place to do business. It's a great place to work. It's a great place to live. It's a great place to raise your kids, and it's going to get better because some of these things. And we got a housing crisis, but I'm glad
sure.
we're finally acting on it.
We've got, you know, looking ahead at your year and a half left in office, of course, but folks writing into us with questions, we're already concerned about what's next and who's going to occupy your job after you leave. We took listener questions, and Maggie and Ellen wrote in to ask, do you feel we have a strong representative ready to step in who is going to care and fight for Washingtonians when you are done with your term? And they were particularly concerned, Maggie and Ellen were, about whether your successor is going to commit to policies like abortion protections and preventative care support. What do you think, Governor?
Well, it depends who the voters choose. I mean, it is the voters. You know, they could make a decision to go backwards and support Donald Trump's policies and take away a woman's right of choice and abandon climate change. You know, if voters do that, yeah, that could go backwards.
And if
but
there
I don't
is,
think that's going
yeah.
to happen.
Governor, and if there is a, you know, a blue state, of course, here, but if there is an election that, you know, ends up with a governor that is maybe in the opposing party, opposes a lot of the policies that you implemented, is there a chance that things you have done could be unwound? I think people think back to the Trump election and a lot of the policies that were able to be walked back after President Obama was out of office. Can you speak to the solidity of your legacy when you leave?
So I believe that Washingtonians will choose a Democrat as the next governor. I believe that the next governor, our next candidate, will be very well qualified and committed to the things I've been fighting for. I think the odds of our state going backwards are very, very small. But it is a reason to vote. Because if you don't vote, bad things can happen. And anybody listening to KUOW today, I urge you to go vote because things can go backwards. But I am very confident that what is true in life is that none of us are irreplaceable. I think I've done a crackerjack job for the state of Washington. I've woken up every morning to see how I can help people realize their dreams and ambitions. And we've had huge, huge progress in the last decade. But we need to vote to continue that effort. I'm confident we're going to have good people behind me, though, as long as they're a Democrat.
Back now with more Soundside. Governor Jay Inslee is on the line with me. I'm Libby Denkman. Governor, let's get right back into it. Nick in Maple Leaf texted us with a question. Nick says, I would like Governor Inslee to talk about what he did and didn't get accomplished environmentally. As an observer, I feel like we are barely slowing, let alone reversing, the destruction of most life on the planet. What were the things that blocked the governor from taking the sort of radical actions that the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, has said are needed to prevent the worst effects of global warming? Governor, what say you?
Well, I excuse me just a second here. I'm trying to calm down a call here.
Yeah, no, it's modern
well,
life. No
well,
worries.
Listen, what slowed us down was the Republican presence in our legislature. I was blocked from getting these policies in place for several years in the first years of my term by the Republican Senate. And this party is a party that's still under the thrall of, you know, the Donald Trump denial of this problem and refusal to assist to us, and it slowed us down. But now we have a suite of policies that are the best, I want to report, the best in the United States. We have a policy that requires 100% clean electricity. We have the best cap and invest bill that has now generated billions of dollars that we're going to help people get access to heat pumps and electric charging stations in the whole nine yards. We have a low carbon fuel standard, which will give people lower carbon fuels for their cars. We have a policy that will help electrify our buses, including our school buses that I was so excited to sign yesterday in Tri-Cities. And importantly, we are the first state in the United States to give people a way to wean themselves off of fossil gas so that basically everyone will get a heat pump, both in building commercially and residentially, so you don't have to hook up to this dirty fossil fuel gas. We have one of the leading efforts to get a very comprehensive way to build electric charging station for electric cars. And importantly, we've embedded equity principles so that disproportionately impacted communities get 35% of the investments. And we're growing jobs like crazy across the state of Washington. We've got leading technology. Just yesterday or day before yesterday, I was looking at the first commercial hydrogen-powered fuel cell, largest in human history, out in Payne Field. We're making batteries in Moses Lake with the silicon anode batteries. So we're rocking it when it comes to climate change. We still need to accelerate this. We now have legislative majorities that have allowed me to put these policies into place, thank goodness, because of the wisdom of voters in the state of Washington, because Washingtonians understand science, and they understand how critical this is. I was snowshoeing with the Secretary of Interior on Earth Day in Mount Rainier, and the ranger pointed out we've lost one half of all the ice in the glaciers in Mount Rainier. So Washingtonians get it that we need to accelerate that, and we are doing it. Now, is there more to do? Yes, we have to implement these laws. We have to make sure that the foundation that I have set is maintained and that we execute on these laws. That's why the bills I passed yesterday were so important, because they allow us to site these energy facilities now. They allow us to build and site transmission lines. It allows us to do what, you know, kind of think of the plumbing. But we now have the infrastructure to meet our statewide goals. We need to do that. I have every confidence we can do this because of the revolution that's going on in our state in so many different ways, from Bellingham, where we're the largest manufacturer of solar cells in the Western Hemisphere, to Soto, where we're building the largest fuel cell that's powering the biggest truck in the world today, to the solar farm I was at yesterday in the Tri-City. So I'm confident we can do this and are doing this in part because of the wisdom of voters in the state of Washington. And I think we had a pretty good governor, too. I'll throw that one in there.
You're allowed, you know, you're not running for re-election. You can say pretty much whatever you want, right? is it freeing? And no, I don't want to ask that. I'll ask that for later, maybe off the air. But, you know, we want to talk about these goals, statewide goals, because Washington has committed to cutting carbon emissions statewide to 45% of 1990 levels. That's the benchmark by the year 2030. And we're supposed to reach carbon neutral by 2050. That's statewide. Now, the data on this is delayed. The most recent numbers are from 2019. But that year, Washington emissions were up 9.3% higher than 1990 levels. And it does not appear, based on the numbers available, that we are on track to meet the benchmarks on the way to carbon neutral. What's going on? And do you believe these new policies are enough to get us there?
I think they are. The 2030 is a very, very, very ambitious goal. If we fall a little short on that one, I am confident we're going to make it up, because we have so many of these new industries coming online. And so I think if you look at the pipeline of technology, it is so robust and it is moving so fast. And because we are insisting that it be implemented, I'll give you an example. So we basically have said we're not going to sell internal combustion vehicles after 2035, and we're going to try to even accelerate that. That policy by itself is going to make, you know, gigatons of CO2 emissions, and we have a suite of those policies that are now in place. So I think what I'm trying to articulate is that we now have in place what is necessary that I am confident will meet these goals, although 2030 could be problematic for us. And those policies in combination, I am very confident, are going to meet our statewide goals, in part because of all of the production of these new products and services that are bringing down the cost of electricity and fuel. Look, the price of electric cars is coming down dramatically. The price of solar power energy has come down 80% in the last decade. The combination of the genius of these folks who are providing these technologies with the policies that are now in place, I believe will meet our goals. That's what I believe. I really have confidence in this.
Under your leadership, Washington became the second state to implement a cap and invest program. The system prices carbon and lets big polluters buy and sell credits based on their emissions, with the plan to reduce the number of credits to get to net zero by 2050. Now, auctions started in March. The first one netted about $300 million. There was some early criticism about how that money would possibly be spent, whether there was enough investment in vulnerable communities, environmental justice issues, possibly too much overhead and administrative spending, not enough on practical solutions to reduce emissions. How do you feel about where the budget landed on the spending of those cap and invest dollars?
I feel good about it because it didn't just spend all the money in one place. It did in multiple places, from applications for consumers to research and development to deployment of these. I thought it was comprehensive and well thought out. I'm very pleased that we look forward to helping new industries. I was yesterday in Tri-Cities talking to a couple of new companies that's going to produce the first potential green fertilizer in human history, and a company that uses formic acid as a way to produce or to convey hydrogen. We are thinking over the horizon and delivering, and I could not be more pleased by this. By the way, as far as the equitable part of this investment, the law does require 35% of these investments to benefit disproportionately impacted communities and 10% for indigenous communities. No other state in the United States has that commitment to equity in the decision making on this, and we are helping these communities. So I feel good about how it is being invested. And I particularly feel good that we're generating billions of dollars to make these investments. And people are looking to us because they recognize we have the best policies in the United States, particularly on this equity issue. Now, there are some things we need to do to improve their efficacy. I met with the environmental minister of Quebec the day before yesterday. He was here. We need to link our cap and invest market with Quebec and California. And we have to merge these markets. And the reason is that this will make it reduce the costs of carbon compliance and increase the investment benefits. So that's something that we need to do. We're getting good signals from California and certainly from Quebec a couple of days ago that we have a tenable way to get that done. So there is more work to do in these policies, but I feel good the direction we're going.
What do you think about the dangers of pessimism and nihilism in this issue? We only have about a minute left, Governor. I know this is a big, bugaboo for you. My generation, I'm an older millennial, and I know Gen Z, we often have this feeling of the world's ending. I mean, we are not meeting global climate benchmarks that need to be met to keep catastrophic change from happening. And there is this like feeling like we're the meme where the dog is sitting in the room where everything's burning and we just say this is fine. I mean, how do we keep an attitude that encourages action instead of really a sense of nothing matters and we can't really turn this around? It's too far gone.
I would say three things. Number one, the antidote for despair. Everybody understands how we could fall into that given the scientific difficulties and reality of what we face. But look, the antidote for despair is action. When you're on a couch and you're kind of feeling the blues, the antidote to that on a physical and personal basis is to get out and go do something. And so to help, if you do have those feelings, literally the best thing you can do for your mental health is go take action. And that's why I'm pleased that our state is taking so much action and everybody can get involved in this. You don't have to be governor to be president to get involved in this effort. You can get involved by voting. You can get involved with your personal choices. You can get involved in how you transport yourself. Everybody has a chance to be part of this revolution. That's number one. Number two, look, we don't, despair is kind of a luxury right now, right? Sort of wallowing in our grief and anxiety is not, we don't have time for that luxury. We gotta all grow here. And number three, we can make a difference. Look, we're making a difference dramatically in our state. We're giving people healthier air to breathe. We are dramatically going to reduce over the upcoming decades our CO2 emissions. It is going to reduce the amount of damage that our world is suffering. Yes, there's going to be a certain amount of degradation of the things we enjoy, but it's a heck of a lot better to have 1 million acres of forest than 10,000 acres of forest. We are going to make a huge difference in what our state looks like, and that is a good way to be alive. I believe this is the best time to be alive in human history, and I'll tell you why. There is no other time in human history where we can do so much good for the generations that will come behind us. And I'm confident. I got six grandkids. I'm making a difference for those grandkids. They are going to have a better world to live in because of what you and I are doing on this than if we were not doing this work. So it's time for us to all get off that couch and take some action, and we're going to feel good about that. I actually do.
Governor Inslee, thank you so much for the conversation. I hope we can have many
You bet.
more while you're still in office and afterwards.
I'm
Appreciate
still
it.
working for you. Don't shut me out the door quite yet. I'm still in harness.
Well, and we
Okay,
need
thanks a
a
lot.
Stanley Cup and a Mariners World Series win
There
while you're
you
in
go.
office. Can you make that pledge?
There you go. I'm pledged. I'll do everything possible. If you let me pinch hit for the Mariners, then I'll
Perfect.
increase the odds.
Great.
Okay,
Governor
we'll see you
Inslee.
later.
Yep. Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Soundside. And hey, this show is only possible because listeners support us. If you are able to give right now, check out the show notes for a link to donate. And don't forget, you can listen live on KUOW 94.9 FM Seattle at noon and 8 p.m., Monday through Thursday, or anytime online at KUOW.org.